I also set a package of these brown bags at the end of the table. They're right behind the grief seminar CDs. Those of you that were here in the spring at the workshop might remember this. At any point in the day, I'm going to be addressing some pretty, I'm not sure how to say it, blunt, major stuff. Today's a heavier day than it was last night. So if any of you want to, sometimes doing a tangible thing helps. But these paper bags are over there on the table. Just get one. There's pens on the registration table. And anything you're struggling with that you want to lay at the foot of the cross, you can write it on this paper bag. You can lay it at the foot of the cross. It's between you and God. It's not for me to look at, and it's not for anybody else to look at. What I'm going to do is I'm going to gather them up at the end of the day, and I'll put them in a bag, and I'll take them home and put them in the furnace. It's not for me to look at. It's not for anybody else to look at. It's just you and God. If you find something like that helpful, feel free to help yourself in doing that. Also, on the registration table, there's a container with a sign on it that says questions. We will have some question and answer periods today. If there are questions you'd like to ask without doing it in public or staying anonymous, feel free to do that, and we will try to address those questions. I'd also like to mention to continue to pray. I definitely feel the attack, and so I'm just asking you to keep praying. I did have a wonderful phone call last night. I actually didn't get it till this morning when I listened to the message in the answering machine. But someone made the statement, understand what you're up against. I'm with you, and I'm praying. Go for it. And that means a lot. Today, this is session two. We're going to be looking at exposing immorality. I'd like to look a little bit at what the root of all sin is. I'd like to look at the causes of immorality. Why are people into immorality? I'd like to look at the causes of sexual addictions. What Scripture says on immorality. And immoral issues in our culture. I know it's a lot to cover this morning, so I'm going to try to cover it as good as I can. All of a sudden last night I realized I've got a lot to cover, so if I don't, I may have to rush through some spots. St. Augustine made the comment, purity of soul cannot be lost without consent. Purity of soul cannot be lost without consent. And I'd like to look at that a little bit. Whenever there's sin in our life, at some point, you or someone opened the door to the stronghold, and it's the same with immorality. You or someone would have opened the door, would have made that consented to open the door to the enemy. And it's very important to identify what that door is and to make sure that those doors are closed. I'd like to look a little bit at the three categories of sin. Hebrews 12, verses 15 and 16 says, looking diligently, that's the first two words, looking diligently. And I'm not sure what crosses your mind when you think of looking diligently, but to me, that's putting a lot of effort into it. It's not just a light thing. We're going to look very closely, very precisely. It actually means closely, aggressively, and a lot of effort. And then he goes on to say, lest any man fail of the grace of God. What is failing of the grace of God? I'd like to give you a definition of the word grace there. It's the power to respond correctly to every situation. How do we fail that grace? A lot of times when we're faced with something, I'm just going to use an example. I'm going to use Keith here as an example. If he would decide to come up here and slap me across the face, I have a choice to make. God's grace is available for me to respond correctly to him, or I can choose to hit him back, which would be my natural inclination. It's not that I have anything against him. But if I choose to hit him back, I'm failing of the grace of God, because really what I'm saying is, God, I don't need your help. I can handle Keith by myself. I need to help. I can take it in my own hands. And if I fail of the grace of God, we're going to find what we'll see next, and that is, it says, lest any root of bitterness springing up and trouble you, and thereby many be defiled, lest there be any fornicator or profane person as Esau, who for one morsel of meat sold his birthright. So you have the moral failure, you have the bitterness, and you have the greed. And if you look at Esau's life, he was more concerned about something temporal than he was on what's mattered. How is moral purity destroyed? Whether you realize it or not, Satan has a goal for you. And Satan's goal is to distort our God-given desires in order to destroy God's purpose and our fulfillment in marriage, thus damaging our spouse and children, and ultimately destroy the home, and those children will then damage their spouse, and children in that cycle will continue and continue and continue until that chain is broken. I'd like to look a little bit at causes of immorality. The first one is exposure to immoral activity. When someone is exposed to immoral activity, it opens the door and awakens feelings and desires that should not be, and especially with small children. I have met with people that were trying all kinds of things and doing all kinds of things sexually at the age of 4. And a child does not think sexually at the age of 4, normally. And if something... If a child does, you can pretty well count on it that they were exposed or they were abused or something. Something has happened. Because it opens the door and awakens feelings, and once that is opened up, there's no way of closing. They struggle and they have to work with it. It leads to immoral thinking and desires. It can be through pornography, whether they find pornography in the home, whether they worked with a number of people where they found their dad's pornography. It could be older siblings showing younger siblings pornography. It could be friends, cousins. And we do have media today that it's very, very available. So it is definitely out there. The other thing I keep hearing is children playing doctor, or children exploring and exposing their bodies to each other. Adults exposing themselves to their children. And this last one here is mostly, it's probably mostly found with women, but not only with women, and that is romance novels. romance novels to a lady is what a Playboy book is to a guy. And I'll be looking at that a little more later. Second one is sexual abuse. And that is also something that is quite rampant. I'm going to be looking at it briefly in the next session. I know that is a topic all in itself. We could spend a whole day on that topic, but because of the nature of the topic that we have, it does come into this, so I want to look at it briefly. It messes up an individual's view of sexuality. It causes false guilt. And that list goes on. The next one is feelings of rejection. There's a chart of sexual addiction. We'll be looking at this one in more detail later on. But if you look at the very top, it says rejection. Many times rejection leads to moral failure, and more so in men than in ladies, but it does with ladies as well. And I'm just going to give an example of that, and that is when a person feels rejected and feels a lot of pain, when they're in the middle of a moral failure act, they don't feel that pain, so it's a cheap medication, and it works the same as medication does. It's not right, but it works as medication. But just like medication, it has side effects. So after they were involved in a moral failure act, they feel guilty. And then they bring law and condemnation, start feeling nobody's as bad as I am. God is not okay with me. They're frustrated over their drives. They feel shame, and they shame themselves. And they feel like they're a hopeless case. And that's rejecting themselves again. And they go right through the same cycle. And it's a continuous cycle. But I'm going to look at that a little more later in a little more detail. Number four is rebellion. With the attitude of nobody's going to tell me what to do. And if I'm told not to do it, then I will. Or if I'm told to do it, then I won't. A rebellious person will do exactly the opposite of what you want them to. There are often reasons why a person is rebellious. And this is a topic that lays heavy on my heart, is the whole thing of rebellion and the way it does get looked at. I'm going to say that a high percentage of young people that are called rebellious that I meet with have rebellious actions, but are not rebellious because they want to be, but it's because they're hurting inside. A number of years ago, I had a young man in my office that I asked him this question. I've started with this statement. I said, You've been a bad boy, haven't you? Now, we did have a relationship before I started that way, but I said, you've been a bad boy, haven't you? And he goes, yes, I have. And he said, so I said, your mom sees you as bad, your dad sees you as bad, your church sees you as bad, and went through a whole number of people. He was moved from one community to another community, and but his answer always was, yes, but I have been. He knew that. He was a type of person that was very jolly, very life of the party, go-getter type of guy. I didn't know that this guy could cry. But I looked at him after I had gone through a whole number of people, and he always answered, yes, but I have been. And I asked him this question. I said, has anybody ever seen you as a hurting boy? I thought his head was going to hit my desk. It stopped about an inch close to the top of my desk. And he cried so hard, he shook. I got out of my chair. I went over on the other side and I held him so he doesn't fall on the floor. That lasted for 20 minutes. But he was looked at as a very rebellious child. This was while we were at Eagle Wings. He was dropped off and basically said, fix him, take care of him, do what you need to do with him. We don't know what to do. Wanting to get even or revenge. When a person has a feeling of wanting to get even or feeling like taking revenge, it's anger driven and they don't care anymore. And sometimes it's just a mindset, I'm going to make somebody pay. The next one is personal gratification. And I want to tell you that lust is never ever satisfied. It always wants more. And I'm not sure if any of you are familiar with Ted Bundy's story. He was a serial killer and rapist in the U.S. I heard his testimony that he shared 2 days before he went on the electric chair. And he made the statement, I never ever thought I would end up here. The first time I opened a pornography book, I never dreamt I'd be here. Lust is never satisfied, never. It progresses more and more and more. Ted Bundy did become a Christian while he was in prison. And that's probably why he shared his testimony. But that stuck out to me, that we can do things and think it's only a little thing. It's not going to affect us that much. But sin will take you farther than you want to go. It'll cost you far more than you want to pay. I know there's more to it, but I can't think of it right now. Next one I want to look at is domineering and controlling mothers. This is not to put mothers down, but it does affect in the home. It causes a mother wound. I meet up with frustrated women whose husbands are bonded to their mom in an unhealthy way. I meet up with women that have mother-in-law issues and they're at odds. Most men don't like the domineering control. The problem is when he submits to it, mothers need to release their sons into manhood. The Jews had a custom they called it the bar mitzvah, and it was what they called a celebration into manhood. There's Indian tribes that had similar things. They went pretty extreme, or we would, in our culture, we would think it's quite extreme. When a boy reached the age of 12, they would put him out in the woods, and he had to fend for himself. And that was their introduction into manhood. Now, that would be quite a thing for a 12-year-old boy. And I'm also going to say it'd be quite a thing for a mother to let go. And for a father. But I think the mother heart sometimes has a hard time letting go. So I want to respect your mother heart. The problem is that husbands many times bond to a mother, to a dominant mother, in a wrong way. Something that
both parents need to understand. Excuse me. Something both parents need to understand is that mothers would mother their sons until they're 40. Mothering sons past the age of manhood is not good for the son, nor the mother. I don't want you to think that the relationship between the mother needs to be discarded, because it's not at all what I'm talking about, but there's changes. Sons need to be able to leave, to cut the apron strings. That micromanaging needs to stop. You shouldn't eat that. Take care of your things. Brush your teeth. Don't eat too much candy. A son needs to learn to make their own decisions, not without guidance. And as a son enters manhood, they need to understand that they no longer make decisions based on the way mom wants it. I know of worked with a couple where his mother would call him and ask him what color she should paint her kitchen. And I asked this young man, I said, "So does your mother not have a husband?" "Well, she does. But she counts more on what I say than what he says." There, I see a wrong bond right there. One thing this does, when you have domineering and controlling mothers, it creates passive men. These men many times expect their wife to control, to make things happen. But it makes them upset if she does control. That sounds like I'm saying two different things, but that's actually what happens. In his head, he knows he should lead, and his heart will not let him. And later on, we're going to look at a little more on passive men. You've probably heard the term. Heard the term that she wears the pants, and these sons are often okay with that, and yet it frustrates them. Next one kind of goes along with it, and that's rejection from moms. Those are things, feeling not loved or good enough for mom. I can't do anything right. I can't do it good enough. That'll develop a strong sexual dependence. They will seek wholeness for a woman to give herself sexually to him, which is often true in marriage. And a man unsatisfied emotionally, his wife burns out trying to satisfy this guy sexually. She feels sexually inadequate for him. He may feel oversexed because he's always craving it. He might not be in pornography. I mean, those are some of the symptoms you have when people are into pornography, but he may not even be in pornography. He may want sex with his wife every day or several times a day. And that's not normal. He's trying to fill a void. And then he feels rejected if she does not respond excitedly or is too tired. Next one I want to look at is absent fathers. If you as men thought you're off the hook, you're not. And this one comes pretty close to home. Dads are too busy or are gone. Dads that don't connect with their children. And I'm not just talking about long-distance truckers. I'm not just talking about farmers. They're included. I'm talking about every occupation. I'm going to tell you that I enjoy working with people, and I thoroughly enjoy it, and I could get so involved in working with people that I can neglect my whole family. I can be way too busy with that and lose my own children. So I'm not picking on any particular occupation, but I want you dads to take a look at your life, and I want you to think about, are you too busy? Do you connect with your children? Because when dads don't connect with their children, this spells rejection to them. This is one of the main reasons, not the only, but one of the main reasons why you have boys that are struggling with homosexuality and those tendencies. It's grounds for girls getting involved sexually. It's boys longing to connect with a male figure. And it's girls longing to connect with a male figure, and for some reason it goes sexual. I'm going to be looking at a chart in just a little bit where it describes that. Both, when not able to connect emotionally with dad, it turns into an eros love, which is a sexual love. Girls will give themselves sexually and hope someone will love them, only to get used, but they do it over and over in search for love. The part that I find disturbing is that so many of our Christian people don't understand that concept. But the immoral men out there that are taking advantage of people understand it, they know it, and I'm going to give you an example. I was speaking at a church, and after the service, right after I was done, I sat on the very front bench. They closed the service, and before I could get anywhere, I was surrounded by about a half a dozen young guys, young single guys. And they said that they work on a construction crew, and there's a guy from town that works on that construction crew as well. And he starts talking to them about what he does and dating and that type of thing. And he was telling them that he dates girls to see how soon he can have sex with them. And just talking about this makes me upset about the guy. I get really frustrated when people purposely take advantage of someone. But he does this, and he told these guys that it's usually in a matter of about 2 weeks, which might be shocking, but that's what he said. But he targets certain girls. He looks for single mom's daughters. He looks for troubled home daughters. If he goes out with a girl and this girl starts talking about her dad and how great her dad is and how good he is and the wonderful relationship that she has with him, he told these guys that I drop her right away because I will never get her. After hearing that story, I asked the question, why is it that immoral men understand this, and as in our Christian circles, we don't? Here's a chart I was wanting to look at. If you look at the very top, it talks about a wound. This comes out of material that I put this chart together myself, but it comes from the material from Jack Frost, which is ministries called Shallow Place Ministries out of the States. I forget now which state. But if you look at the very top, it talks about a wound, a lack of the storge love or that parental love. As a child, they did not feel loved. And a question you can ask yourself, does my child feel loved? Not, I know I love my child. But ask your child. I remember on the way home from church, the message that Sunday morning had been about time, and time
spells love to your child. And one of the most important words, the three most important words you can tell your child is, I love you. So I decided on the way home, I just started doing my homework and I asked the question, do you guys feel loved by me? The two youngest right away were like, yeah, Dad, you know that. So I asked the question again. This time our oldest answered and she said, yeah. I said, do you hear the words, I love you, from me? Yeah. Do you wish you heard them more often? Do you hear them enough? Yeah, I'd like to hear more. I was glad she was that honest with me. I thought I was doing pretty good. But I wasn't doing as good as I thought. The next one there is shame. Shame has the feeling of being uncovered and exposed. And I'm going to tell you that every parent, for the most part, loves their children. The problem is, there are children that say they don't feel loved. So you ask the question, well, why is that? What's happening there? It's not enough if you think you love them. It's not enough if you think you're doing well in loving your children. I'm convinced that every parent loves their child. I don't doubt that one bit. So when that, from the shame, it leads into a spiritual orphan, no sense of comfort or safe place, there's no protection, leads to fears and insecurity, no one there to comfort or protect, nowhere to go with the fears and the insecurities. And then anger sets in. It can be an aggressive anger, or it can be a repressed anger. And a repressed anger is an anger turned inward. We as Christian people many times do very well in not showing our anger or not acknowledging our anger, because Christians don't get angry. We don't do that stuff. But many times we turn the anger inward. We're burning inside. And I'm going to say that a very high percentage of depression is because of a repressed anger. And the anger is, I have to protect myself because nobody else will. Anger is an emotion, but it's a response to protecting myself. And then we isolate ourselves and become independent. I don't need anyone. I can protect myself, and I will take care of myself. And then we control. We put walls of self-protection around us. We're not going to be open, at least not on the deep things. We can talk surface stuff, but we'll leave it at that. That way nobody really gets to know who I am. And then we start rejecting ourselves, which creates pain. Nobody cares. I'm all alone. There's something wrong with me. And it's amazing how many people think there's something wrong with them. And then pain seeks pleasure. Pain always seeks pleasure. Not just sometimes, but it does. They look for relief. And many times they turn then to counterfeit affections. It can be other people, food, alcohol, sex, drugs, work, you name it. All kinds of things, which then leads to addictions and compulsions and wrong emotional bonds. And then they start losing a sense of self-worth. I must be stupid. Nobody else is like this. They feel separated from God.
I'm too bad for God. God would never want me. They feel empty, giving up feeling. There's no point in trying. I'm a failure. It's no wonder my parents didn't love me. Now they're justifying the wound, which just makes the wound deeper. That's like taking a stick into a, if I have a really deep open sore in my arm, and I would take a stick in there and stir in it every day. Just makes it worse. I've had people sitting in my office, and they would plead with me, would you just give up on me? That would just prove what I believe. Now I'm going to tell you, if somebody pleads with me to give up on them, that's like saying sick 'em to a dog. That gives me all the more reason not to give up. And I don't believe in giving up on people. Whenever there are sexual problems in a couple, there is always a moral violation in one or both. And that can include sexual abuse where it was done to you. You can't hear back there? Okay. I will try to speak up. Thank you. Whenever every moral violation is cleaned up and a couple is morally free, the sexual relationship will come together. And it's amazing how that happens. Many times you don't even have to talk about the sexual relationship very much at all. There's people that have not had a sexual relationship for many years, and you work on resolving the issues, and that part will come together. Some questions I'd like to ask, and I want you to take a moment to think about these questions. What was your first introduction to sexuality? And the next second one is, does the way you are introduced to sexuality affect how you view it? Keep those questions in the back of your mind as we go through this. What is your view? How you view something is how you will use it and treat it. If you have an old vehicle that is pretty much worn out, and I don't know if there's anybody here that enjoys going mudding or seeing what you can do with an old vehicle in an old field somewhere. But let's say you do. And if it's an old vehicle, if it gets wrecked, so what? That's just an old thing. It's worn out. It's pretty much done for. Now, and let's say you and I go mudding. And we enjoy, we have lots of fun. Let's say a year later I come back and I visit you again. And I ask you, so you still have that old vehicle? Yep, I do. Is there any chance we can go mudding? No way. We will not. And I'm like, well, why? I just got that vehicle restored. Same vehicle, but the perspective changed. The view of that vehicle has changed. How you view something is how you will use it. Now, if your first introduction to sexuality was in a dirty, in a bad way, whether it was through pornography or anything else, that is how you will use it. It's a shameful thing. We don't talk about this stuff. We don't, whatever.
That's why I have some books over there to help teach your children to get it from a godly perspective. And we need to start early. If it's not done early, chances are you've missed it. Because, like I mentioned, I've met with people that were exposed to wrong stuff at the age of 4. It can also happen earlier than that, where a person has no memory of it. One situation is a little boy that had all the symptoms of being sexually violated, and the parents didn't know anything. They questioned him. He had no memory. But when that boy was at the age of, it was either 8 or 10, I think it might have been 10, there was a babysitter that called them and apologized. And that happened before this child was 1. I will have to say that when we leave our children with babysitters, I hear a lot of things. It's hard to do that. Because what you think you can trust people, you think you're only going to get babysitters that you can trust, right? I think most of you would think that. Or at least I hope so. But it happens with people that you think you can trust. There was actually a situation where we had to go and talk to our children. We found out some things, and we went to go and talk to our children and ask them if anything happened. Was a babysitter we thought we could trust. As far as we can tell, nothing did happen, for which we're glad. But I'm saying, if you have children, if you have small children, you leave them with babysitters, pray a hedge of protection around them. Even when it's with people that you know you've convinced you can trust. What are the causes of sexual addiction? I'm going to look at sexual addiction a little later in session 4 and in more detail. But the causes of sexual addiction is a void inside. It's an intimacy disorder, or if you want to call it that. It's a way to medicate painful feelings and experiences and memories. And it's a coping mechanism. Now, I'm told, I don't know, but I'm told that there's sometimes ladies that are pregnant have a craving for ice. And they tell me that that's a sign that a lady is low in iron. And I found this interesting. You can give that lady all the ice you want, all the ice she can possibly eat. Ice will never fill the need for iron. The same thing is when someone is lacking emotional love and craves for sex, they'll never be satisfied. It'll never do it. The deepest need for every man and every woman is to be emotionally loved, not sex. I did this with a couple a number of years ago. I said, this was after we had worked through a lot of stuff, I looked at him and I said, I'm going to give you a choice between two things. If you could pick being emotionally loved
or having sex, which one would you pick? He didn't think real long. But he says, emotional love. When a person knows what it is to be emotionally loved, that means, doesn't mean you would discard sexuality. But when a person knows what it is to be emotionally loved, they realize that that's their deepest need, and it's the deepest need of every person. I'm just going to read a quote. Therefore, a godly man and woman enjoy relational sex, not just an erotic, orgasmic thrill, even though it includes an erotic, orgasmic thrill, but is much, much more than that. I'm going to look at a number of scriptures where it talks about immorality. Probably could use other scriptures, but I'm going to be going through these rather rapidly because there's quite a bit to cover. Galatians 5:19, there's a number of words in there. And the reason I did this is because I discovered that a lot of people do like I used to. And that is when you read the Bible, you get into some of these words, and especially some of these that are pertaining to immorality. Well, I don't really know what they mean. They don't really apply to me, so we just read on. We don't really look what they're talking about. That's a little bit the exercise we're going to be doing here. Verse 19 says, now the works of the flesh are manifest, which are these: adultery, fornication, uncleanness, and lasciviousness. Adultery there means to commit adultery. Now these definitions come out of the Strong's Exhaustive Concordance. They are not out of the English dictionary. And what the concordance does, it takes you back to the original Greek, which the New Testament was written in Greek, the Old in Hebrew. So it takes it back to the original language and what the original word meant, but it was translated into the English word. A quick example of that is, I don't know what you think of the word delight. In Psalm 37, verse 4, it says, delight thyself also in the Lord, and he will give thee the desires of your heart. I've heard that verse being explained many times. But one day I looked at the word delight, and I went back to the Greek dictionary three times, four times maybe, because I couldn't believe what it said. I thought I was looking at the wrong word. In Psalm 40, verse 8, it says, I delight to do thy will, O Lord. There the word delight means to find pleasure in, to be excited about. But that's not what it means in Psalm 37, 4. Psalm 37, 4, it means to become soft and pliable. The idea of Plato. Moldable, shapeable, and formable. To me, that gives a totally different light on that verse. Go home and study it out. But that's why I think it's important to look up the words in the Strong's. Fornication there means harlotry, including adultery, incest, and prostitution. Uncleanness there means impurity, any natural pollution acted out by oneself or someone else, moral uncleanness, lewdness, inciting lust, and so on. If anybody, I don't know if you ever meet up with anybody that justifies masturbation, but right here is a word that takes that out right there. I am told that there are people that do justify it. Lasciviousness is licentiousness or sexually unrestrained. And then in verse 21, it ends with such like, anything similar in appearance. First Corinthians 6, 9 and 10. Know ye not that the unrighteous shall not inherit the kingdom of God? Be not deceived, neither fornicators, nor idolaters, nor adulterers, or effeminate, nor abusers of themselves with mankind. The word deceived there is to cause to roam from safety, truth, or virtue, to to go astray, to err, seduce, and wander. Fornicators there is to sell, to prostitute, also a male debauchee or a libertine, sexually and morally unrestrained, a whoremonger, one who resorts with prostitutes. Idolaters, image worship, a heathen god or an image or the worship of such. And that does also come into play with immorality, because people that are involved in immorality, sex has become their god. Adulterers, a male paramour, an illicit or not legally permitted apostate. The next one I found very interesting. Effeminate. That one means a boy or a male wearing soft, fine, feminine clothing or a catamite. There is a word that talks about cross-dressing in the New Testament. Just recently I heard a minister say that he doesn't know of a verse in the New Testament where it talks about that. And later I actually had a chance to talk to him and asked him, I said, have you ever looked up that word? And so we had a good discussion after that. Abusers of themselves is a sodomite or homosexuality. And then verse 10 there, nor thieves, nor covetous, nor drunkards, nor revilers, nor extortioners shall inherit the kingdom of God. Extortioners there is rapacious, giving to plundering, greed, to seize, to take by force, or rape. In other words, it was ravening, to plunder, devour greedily, which would definitely fit into this category as well. Colossians 3, verse 5, mortify therefore your members which are upon the earth, fornication, uncleanness, inordinate affection, evil concupiscence, and covetousness, which is idolatry. Fornication there is harlotry, uncleanness is the same as the one we looked at earlier, and then there's inordinate affection, which is suffering a passion or lust, experience a sensation or impressing, and it's usually very powerful. Evil concupiscence. Concupiscence is a longing for that which is forbidden. Covetousness, the whole idea of greediness and fraud. Idolatry, image worship. And then there's verse 8. But know ye also, put off all these, anger, wrath, malice, blasphemy, filthy communication out of your mouth. And filthy communication, there is vile conversation, shameful, something said, thought, or reasoned. Matthew 15:19. For out of the heart proceed evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, false witnesses, and blasphemies. Evil thoughts. Evil there is hurtful, evil in effect or influence. Thoughts, this can be a discussion, consideration, a debate, dispute, doubting, imagination. Murders, to slay or to slaughter, kill. Adulteries, which is adultery, which we looked at. Fornications, we looked at that. Thefts, stealing from. I'm not going to be getting into dating relationships and any of that stuff this weekend. That is a topic all in its own. But I'm going to say, young men, if you do not keep your hands off of this girl that you are dating, you are stealing, you're a thief. Because she does not belong to you. She belongs to her father. And I could spend a lot more time on that, talking about why hands-off relationship is so important and
But that's a topic in itself. If you want more information on that, talk to me sometime. False witness, which is an untrue testimony. Blasphemies. Slander, criticism, defaming, evil speaking, and such like. Ephesians 5, 3 to 4. But fornication and all uncleanness and covetousness, let it not be once named among you as becometh saints. Okay, there again we have the word fornication, we have the word uncleanness, covetousness, and then in verse 4, filthiness, foolish talking, jesting, which are not convenient, but rather giving of thanks. Filthiness, there is shamefulness, obscenity, foolish talking, it's referring to silly talk or buffoonery. Jesting is well turned, ready to report, witticism, convenient, attained to be proper. 1 Thessalonians 4 and 5. That every one of you should know how to possess his vessel in sanctification and honor. Possess there means to get or acquire, to own, purchase, obtain. A vessel is an implement, equipment, apparatus. I don't know if you look at your body as an implement or equipment, but I'll let you make that decision. Sanctification. Sanctification there means purification, purity, and holiness, to make holy, to purify. Honor is value, money paid, esteem, dignity. Precious. And verse 5 again talks about, uses the word concupiscence, and that is a longing for that which is forbidden, or to set the heart upon and long for. Ephesians 4:17-20. Verse 17, this I say therefore and testify in the Lord, that ye henceforth walk not as other Gentiles walk, in the vanity of your mind. I'm just going to look at the word vanity there. Intuity, figuratively, morally, depravity, vanity, and also the base from another word, which means empty, profitless. Having your understanding darkened, being alienated from the life of God through the ignorance that is in them because of the blindness in their heart. Understanding is a deep thought. And it's an exercise in the mind. Understanding darkened means to obscure, to darken. Alienated is to estrange away. Ignorance means ignorance, not knowing. Blindness. This kind of surprised me. Blindness. It actually means the word stupidity or callousness, hardness. Verse 19, who being past feeling have given themselves over unto lasciviousness to work all uncleanness with greediness. Past feeling is to smart, to grieve out, or become apathetic. Lasciviousness there, we looked at that earlier. Uncleanness again, we looked at that one earlier. Greediness is avarice. Greediness, materialism, fraudulency, greed, and exhortation. And verse 20 says, but ye have not so learned Christ. Hebrews 13, verse 4. Marriage is honorable in all, and the bed undefiled.
but whoremongers and adulterers God will judge. The word whoremonger there means to sell. It can be a male prostitute, a debauchee, which is a libertine, which is the idea of sexually unrestrained, fornicator. An adulterer there has the idea, perhaps a primary word, a male paramour, figuratively apostate or adulterer. I will possibly be looking at that verse a little bit more later, but it goes along with the question I asked last night at the close, where I said, or somewhere last night, that are there wrong things taking place in the marriage bed in Christian circles? And the answer to that question is yes. And I'll be looking at some of that in the next section here. And this is moral failure issues found among Christians. In this section, I am going to have to be very blunt. I'm going to be talking very openly, I guess. I don't mean to offend anyone. But the topic here is moral failure issues found among Christians. And I'm going to tell you that I have found every one of these that I'm going to be looking at.